The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
October 21st, 1966, Wales. After weeks of persistent rain, a sunny Friday morning finally dawns. But in the sleepy village of Aberfan, situated in a picturesque valley, a heavy fog lingers after the night. The absence of sunshine, however, does not bother the villagers as they set off for the last day of school and work of the week. One of them is barber George Williams, who is on his way to his salon on Moy Road. His walk is abruptly interrupted by a loud roar from the hillside, and he stops in his tracks. The sound is reminiscent of a low-flying jet plane. In the thick morning fog, Williams initially sees nothing. But the ominous roar grows louder and louder. Right through the white curtain of fog suddenly shoots a dark flood of stone, coal, and mud, as high as a two-story building. The barber can hardly believe his eyes. In front of him, Moy Road's beige-gray brick houses fall like dominoes as the wave knocks down everything in his path, right towards Pantglass Junior School, where classes have just started. The roar reaches its crescendo in a deafening boom. Then, there's an ominous silence.
This is Mayday, a show about disasters. In this episode, we talk about the Aberfan mining disaster, a terrifying event that shook an entire nation, and by extension, the entire world. The hosts of this episode are Luke Welland and me, Maya Nalani. Mayday Season 1 is made by the podcast company, Cast. In southeast Wales lies one of the country's smallest councils, Merthyr Tydfil, and within it, the small community of Aberfan. Here, people live a simple but happy rural life, with markets and carnivals as regular features. On a hillside above the village's primary school, Pantglass Junior School, seven ash-grey constellations stand out. The alpine peak-like hills are the byproducts of the industry that shaped Aberfan, coal mining. The community took shape in the 1870s when entrepreneur John Nixon established two coal mines in the area. What started as two settlements and an inn has, in 1966, grown into a village. There are shoemakers, hairdressers, dance halls, and even a small cinema. Everything the miners and their families could possibly need.
In the 1960s, the coal industry is at the end of its heyday, and many mines have been forced to close down in South Wales. But that doesn't make it a small business. Coal is still the most popular energy source in the country. And of the 700,000 men who go underground on a daily basis to earn a living, 300,000 work in coal mining. It's risky work, but the wages can pretty much support a family. The mines are the lifeblood of many communities in Wales, including Aberfan. If coal mining were to stop, it would be a major blow to the village's households. Whether that happens or not is up to the government organization called the National Coal Board, abbreviated NCB. For the past 20 years, they have controlled all of the UK's coal mines and tips. They are also responsible for ensuring that work is carried out safely. When the NCB takes over operations in the 1940s, inspectors from the organization are to be sent to the mines and dumps already in operation. Productivity is to be evaluated and a risk assessment compiled. But for some reason, no such inspector ever shows up in Aberfan.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The mining and extraction of coal generates huge amounts of byproducts in the form of rock, clay, and ash. The heavy residues are transported in wagons by rail and then disposed of by crane in dumps in the surrounding area. When a dump is considered too large, a new site is chosen and the process can start again. This is an expensive activity, and NCB is keen to minimize the expenses related to it. As well as being rich in coal, the mountains surrounding Aberfan contain large amounts of sandstone. The porous blocks give rise to underground natural water sources, the mouths of which create small streams along the sides of the mountains. Although mining sludge and water have proved an unpredictable combination in the past, one such mountainside has become the site of the Aberfan dumps. Several of them are located right on top of an estuary, and the bottom layer is constantly being mixed with new water. One of these is the recently started tip number 7, which, at 105 feet, towers above Pantglass Junior School. New for tip number 7 is that they've started dumping so-called trailing there. This is an extremely fine-grained mining dust, which, on contact with water, takes on a jelly-like consistency.
In the 1950s, the inhabitants of Aberfan begin to suffer from severe flooding. Contaminated water from the dumps makes its way down the mountainside streams and clogs many of the village's wells, leaving a slimy black film over roads and house foundations. The recurring flooding prompts outraged residents to write letters to the NCB, appealing to the organization to fix the problem. The flow of letters increased in the 1960s, as more and more Aberfan residents contacted NCB about the movement of the dumps. Parts of the large piles of sludge have been sliding down the mountain. But NCB does not want to acknowledge either the flooding or the movement of the piles.
It is just before 7:30 in the morning on October 21st, 1966, when crane operator Gwynne Brown and his colleagues clock in at tip number 7. They're above the thick fog that envelops Aberfan, and from here, the community is completely hidden. When Gwynne Brown arrives at his crane at the foot of the tip, a troubled expression spreads across his rugged face. During the night, a part of the 297,000 cubic yard pile of mining sludge has slid down the rail on which Gwynne's crane stands. He asks one of his colleagues to report the incident to the group supervisor, who is in a meeting down at the mine. While waiting for instructions, Gwynne Brown and the rest of the group start pushing the crane and the wagons of mine debris aside, a precautionary measure in case the pile moves further, which it does. Within 24 hours, tip number 7 has slid about 20 feet down the mountainside.
In one of the smaller brick houses below tip number 7, chaos reigns as 8-year-old Gaynor Madgwick and her 5 siblings get ready for the day. Bags being packed, half-eaten breakfast sandwiches and flailing hairbrushes vie for space in the Madgwick family's small living room. Despite the mess, the mood is usually good. Gaynor Madgwick and her siblings are used to sharing most things equally. Clothes are handed down, and the whole family sleeps on 2 double beds. Like most other children in Aberfan, Gaynor's father works down the coal mine, and her mother is a housewife. As Gaynor and her sisters prepare to head out into the fog, their attention is drawn to their only brother, Carl. He's usually the first of the siblings to be ready, but today everything seems to be a challenge. He's already asked his mother to let him stay at home today, but his request was denied. With a reluctant look on his face, he's now buttoning the top buttons of his shirt in a last silent protest. But Carl won't have to sulk for long. Today is Friday, which means half day at school. Next week is also the long-awaited half-term break.
For students like Gaynor Madgwick, whose families are economically disadvantaged, school lunches are often the main meal of the day. The government, therefore, wants school meals to be nutritious, hot, and preferably cooked from scratch. At Pantglass Junior School, the person responsible for all of this is 44-year-old Nancy Williams. On Fridays, fish is always served, often with a white parsley sauce on the side. But before Nancy starts preparing the dish of the day, the week's lunch money has to be collected. With a pen in her breast pocket and a folder of class lists under her arm, she heads for the corridor outside the principal's office.
After hearing about the slips in tip number 7, crane operator Gwynne Brown's supervisor decides to stop dumping there immediately and start a new tip next week. He also wants the crane and wagons moved further away. But before they start, he suggests a tea break. Halfway to the tea room, Gwynne Brown notices a strange movement in the corner of his eye. The depression created when parts of tip number 7 slipped has started to move again. Slowly at first, then the speed increases exponentially. Gwynne Brown stands petrified as a dark tidal wave, several feet high, takes shape before his eyes. With a violent roar, it plunges down the mountainside and disappears into the fog. 2 farmhouses on the mountainside are the first to face the force of the wave. Once it has passed, there is no trace of the houses. Trees and other vegetation are completely destroyed. The glittering dark avalanche devours everything in its path.
At Pantglass Junior School, 8-year-old Gaynor Madgwick is getting ready for her first lesson of the day, math. Her brother, Carl, is sitting in the next classroom. 15 minutes into the lesson, a loud noise is suddenly heard from the mountains. The math teacher walks over to one of the classroom windows with a confused look on her face. But outside, all she can see is fog. Then it happens. A loud bang turns Gaynor's head, and an avalanche of mining mud completely destroys one of the classroom walls. She makes a dash for the door, but doesn't get many steps before everything goes black.
When matron Nancy Williams arrives at the headmaster's office, 5 students are ready with a pound in their hands to pay for the week's lunches. She's about to accept the last note when a rumbling noise fills the corridor. "Is it an earthquake?" asks one of the children with wide eyes. But Nancy doesn't have time to answer. She's interrupted when a large window at the opposite end of the corridor shatters. Shards of glass fly in all directions as a glittering black wall rushes towards them. Nancy Williams reacts instinctively, screaming at the children to get down on the ground. Then she throws herself over them like a human shield.
Crane operator Gwyn Brown's scream sends his colleagues rushing out of the tea room. When the group realizes what has happened, they don't waste a single second, setting off at full speed down the mountainside as tip number 7 continues to collapse. All the while shouting for people to run away. Behind them, more miners come running.
Traveling at 75 miles per hour, the wave finally comes to a halt as it crashes into Pantglass Junior School. On its way, it has destroyed 18 houses, and Moy Road will never be the same again.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
When schoolgirl Gaynor Madgwick wakes up, she's been thrown to the other side of the classroom. She's lying on top of one of her classmates, Gerald Kerwin. None of them understand what just happened. Around them, the classroom has been turned upside down. Benches and chairs are all over the place. The ceiling has collapsed, and the black mess extends high into the room. Next to Gaynor and Gerald is another student. The boy is Gerald's benchmate, who only a moment ago was sitting just inches away from him. "Are you okay?" Gerald asks, but gets no answer. Instead, to his horror, he sees streaks of blood begin to seep from the boy's nose. He appears to be asleep, but both Gaynor and Gerald are painfully aware of what's happened.
One by one, the children outside of the headmaster's office wake up. But the matron, Nancy Williams, who used her own body to protect them, remains unconscious. One of the children is 7-year-old Karen Thomas. Clamped down, she can just reach Nancy's head, and with her tiny hands, she desperately tugs at the matron's dark brown hair. But not a sound comes from the 5 children's protector. All Karen can hear is herself and the other children screaming.
Schoolgirl Gaynor Madgwick is too shocked to scream. A large radiator has come loose from the wall and landed in her lap. The pain is blinding. The heavy lump of metal has broken both of her legs. But it has also created a vital air pocket under all the rubble for her and Gerald, air that is slowly running out. The force of the mud wave has punched a hole in the wall of Gaynor's brother's classroom, and through the crack, she sees a lifeless hand hanging out. She's close enough to grab the hand and squeeze it as hard as she can. All she wants is for the hand to squeeze back.
Across Aberfan, villagers grab shovels and gardening tools and rush to Moy Road to help those in need. Most of them gather around Pantglass Junior School, where the damage is the worst, and begin a frantic search for survivors. Although time is short, they have to work in a structured way. From time to time, they stop to listen and find out where in the rubble the distress calls are coming from. The more time passes, the fewer the calls. The oxygen in the air pockets has started to run out. Within 20 minutes, crane operator Gwyn Brown and the other miners make it down to the site and join the rescue effort. Their good knowledge of mining sludge will be vital over the next few hours. Almost immediately after the tsunami hits the school, the black sludge returns to its solid form. Further complicating the rescue effort, the wave broke 2 large water pipes that are now spewing thousands of gallons over the site.
Among the first children to be found are 8-year-old Gaynor Madgwick and her classmate, Gerald Kerwin. Gaynor later learns that both her brother, Carl, and one of her sisters have died in the rubble. The older sisters, who were in secondary school, survived by the skin of their teeth. Their classes had not yet started, and they were outside the school. When rescue workers find 7-year-old Karen Thomas and the other students outside the principal's office, they can hardly believe their eyes. All 5 are alive. One by one, they get dug out of the rubble. Last to be carried out is the body of Matron Nancy Williams. Her quick decision to protect the children cost her life. She likely died the second the wave washed over them. In her hand, she still holds one of the children's lunch money.
After an hour and a half, only 10 children have been found alive in the rubble. Rescue work continues into the night, but despite the tireless efforts of the villagers, from now on, it will be a matter of digging up dead bodies. 144 people die and another 35 are injured in the accident. Most of the victims suffocate or die from being crushed. Among the dead are 106 children at Pantglass Junior School. About half of the school's pupils have died within seconds. In addition to the 18 houses that the wave destroyed on its way to the school, a further 60 buildings are so badly damaged that they have to be evacuated. A makeshift morgue is set up in a nearby chapel where the identification of victims begins. Parents are given the unimaginable task of trying to find their children among the bodies. This process is further complicated by the fact that many of the dead have extensive crush injuries. While the funerals are being held in Aberfan, an investigation is being set up to find out the causes that led to the accident.
At the end of the investigation, all the blame is placed on one single actor, the state organization NCB. The investigation finds that the location of dump number 7 on top of a natural water source combined with the persistent rain caused the mine trailings to be set in motion. The fact that the dump was directly above a community should also have been enough for the NCB to recognize the potential risk, especially since similar slides have occurred several times in the past. The investigation also revealed that prior to the accident, NCB had received several letters from concerned Aberfan residents regarding the condition and location of tip number 7. One of the letters came directly from Pantglass Junior School. Instead of taking action on the tip, NCB threatened to close the mine if any more complaints were received, which is likely to have discouraged many economically dependent people from voicing their opinions. However, the investigation notes that at the time of the accident, there was no policy or law on the placement of tips, and that NCB did not technically commit a crime. All 9 NCB employees identified as main culprits keep their jobs. New recommendations are set in place to regulate how tipping should be done in the future. Several legislative changes are made to improve safety, but also to hold government bodies accountable. As a result of the accident, mining operations around the world are inspected to minimize the risk of similar accidents. In the following years, more and more mines in the UK closed down, and today, there are only about 20 left.
A combination of survivors' guilt and a culture of silence around mental illness has made many people reluctant to talk about the Aberfan accident to this day. One person who has chosen to open up is Gaynor Madgwick, now 65 years old. She wants to encourage more people to talk about their experiences both before and after the accident. In an interview with BBC Sounds, she reflects on the day that shaped her childhood. Quote, "When I look back on it now, and from the time I heard that my brother Carl had died, I have always hoped that it was my brother's hand I was clutching there in the rubble. It gives me peace." End quote. Karen Thomas, now 64, has made it a tradition to place flowers on the grave of matron Nancy Williams every year. Quote, "It's the only way I can thank her," she says.
After the accident, the Aberfan Disaster Memorial Fund was set up and received as much as £1.75 million in donations from around the world. But in a further act of injustice, the victims and their families have to fight hard to see any of that money. Among other things, they undergo tests to prove that they were actually close to their children and that they've been affected by their deaths. After a protracted battle between the NCB, the government, and the residents of Aberfan, the remaining dumps are relocated. The NCB reluctantly pays for a small part of the clearance, but it is mainly paid for by the government. The foundation is also forced to pay £150,000 for the relocation to go ahead. In 1997, the UK government pays back the money, but without taking inflation into account. In 2007, the Welsh government donates £1.5 million to the foundation. Ultimately, the NCB pays the affected families the equivalent of $115,000 per victim. People who suffered lifelong physical injuries or whose houses were damaged receive higher amounts. Still, it is a cheap deal compared to what it would have cost the NCB to move the tips themselves to avoid the 1966 accident. Perhaps the saddest thing about the Aubervon accident is that all parties were aware of the risks of tip number 7, but chose to ignore them for the sake of money. It was not a question of if, but rather when disaster would strike. And the people of Aubervon were the ones to pay the price. This has been Mayday, about the Aubervon mining disaster. The hosts of this episode were Luke Welland and me, Maya Nalani. The script was written by Matthias Johnson, sound designed by Victor Pearson. Mayday is made by us at the podcast company, Cast.